あ、ここいるんだ。
本当？見えないでしょ？どこにいるのかな？ね、見えない。
What's good, internet? Welcome to Waypoint Radio episode. I don't know, Kyle, which episode is it? What are we?
Five ten.
Five, oh, ten. I pulled that out of my ass. Let's go.
You did it.
5:10. I do. Well, when I write the newsletter, so it's like I get like an inkling of like where we are at the numbers. Even if I didn't write that down on my intro. Robin didn't play any video games this week. Just said no to video games, and so you instead have me as your host. But that's okay.
Imagine other people who Rob as a Rorschach-like figure looking down upon the great unwashed masses of video games and saying no.
People doing the things most closely associated with what they're paid for? Can't imagine. Yeah. Can't imagine doing that. Sorry, we're too busy recording Waypoint's wildly successful sports podcast, which people think is now just called Sports. Which is a funny name for a podcast, though. I should say it's not definitive. It's just some kick-ass artwork, which was created by our producer, Ricardo Contreras.
Hi. I just changed colors on our old logo. It was very fun.
I don't know how to do that.
I did try to match the orange. I looked up the hex code and all that for the Bears official orange, yeah. So.
No, you did a good job. You matched at least however it feels in my mind, my body, my soul, my bowels of how the Bears feel and look to me. We're also joined by our other producer, Renata Price.
Hello and howdy and hi and hello.
We're going to keep this one a little short. We had a long planning meeting for a thing you will hear more about in the upcoming weeks. And also, we've been firing all cylinders on podcasts. You know, there's between back-to-back weeks of sports and then soon they'll be able to listen to the new episode of My Turn, right?
Yeah, Alien goes up today when we're recording onto the Plus feed.
Yes.
So regular feed people, you'll hear that next week.
Who could even imagine having to wait a whole week to listen to us talk about Alien? I could not. I would just go to
Waypoint.
I would just go to waypointplus.com and just fix that immediately. You were also fixing something, Kato, and you were about to explain what you were fixing, but because sometimes there are conversations that just happen off the microphone, this one has happened on the microphone, which is why I wanted the audience to have an update. But you were opening a package.
Yeah.
And thought maybe you got a cool device. Maybe you got like a cool, like a mouse. You complained about not having a mouse. I'm like, oh, we finally bought a mouse. But then you pulled out an ice pack. And I was like, well, maybe there's a live mouse in there. You know, he just took it. He took it too literally. But you pulled out something else entirely.
During the meeting that we were having, I got a doorbell ring and I ran out because I knew this package was coming today, possibly, and it's very important that I get it as soon as it lands because it has live specimens inside of it. It has an ice pack.
Is that something you get on Amazon?
No, you have to call like a special place. I got this one from Arbico Organics. But apparently this is a thing that exists because moths aren't just a problem for clothing. Although that's the specific problem I'm having where they are multiplying in my apartment. And
we've had them breeding in a closet, right?
Yeah, yeah. They were on clothes. They were on some like wool jackets. And it was like, it was bad. And then we put out traps.
Wasn't this originally related to your partner's art projects?
They have a stash of yarn that they keep here because they do various fiber work alongside their drawing and painting, and so there was just a whole stack of like, I don't know, probably like, imagine in your head what like 15 pounds of yarn looks like.
Okay, I thought you were gonna like explain to me what 15 pounds of like moth eggs are. And I guess that's why I had the gross face already. I was like, yeah, I'm imagining, you know, like an alien when they come across a bunch of eggs.
Yeah. It was bad. They were all up in the yarn balls. There were definitely some we just threw out and we're like, we're not going to go deeper. We don't want to know at this point because it's kind of a lot on the outside, but they tend to like to crawl into small spaces. Anyways, we've sent it back like various like home remedy things that you do. You know, you put cedar blocks in places, you put things in the oven. Fire. You put things in the oven for a certain amount of time at like a low temperature and it kills most of the things.
So what? What do you mean? What are you putting at a low temperature?
Clothes, just like everything that they could have like laid an egg on.
Oh, I see.
You put it in the oven.
Okay.
At like 170.
Wait, how low?
170.
170? You're putting your clothes in at 170.
It's fine. It's fine.
That is
nothing
so
melted.
Bad for the fabric.
Well, no, it's all
looked
cotton.
It up on Google. If there's a, like, we learned this in previous podcasts.
Yes.
As Kato has pointed out,
so bad for the
if you can find it in a YouTube video, you can follow the steps.
Yeah.
And the steps said, step one, Put your clothes in the damn oven at 170.
And it'll kill the eggs, which is important, because nothing else kills the fucking eggs. No, mothballs don't kill the fucking eggs, and we also don't want to do that, because that's gross. So, we did the whole process of, like, taking every piece of fabric that we could think of that existed in our house and put it in the oven at 170, and then put them into plastic bags so that the fucking moths couldn't get back into them.
I mean, it's not dissimilar to when you have bed bugs. And
bed bugs are kind of worse, but yes.
but I mean, like,
yes, similar.
In an instance where we had those, you put them in the dryer on high heat and you just run that
right
three times until, like, and it's the same. It's the same concept.
Similar kind of thing.
You know what? Honestly, not so similar to Alien. Like, I don't know what to do. Kill it with fire.
Kill it with fire. Kill it with fire. But so that doesn't. Like, they can still lay eggs other places that aren't the thing that they eat. They just are most likely to do that because the little larvae need to eat come kind of immediately. But they can, like, sometimes put them on the underside of, like, dressing drawers or, like, they can put it near enough that they'll crawl over and eat whatever material they need. And they can, like, they can also survive off of fucking, like, paper fiber, which is not the type of fiber they like. They'd rather it be animal
those
fiber.
But they're trash bugs?
Yeah.
They
can
still survive. The cockroaches of the sky? wait, so what are these parasites? So you showed a little bottle of parasites. Are we like sprinkling this like it's Parmesan cheese? And
Parmesan. No, that'd be funny. But look, they send basically, so the answer to this is you get a wasp, a specific type of wasp that is parasitic.
That they want to consume.
What the wasp does. So here's, they have these little paper tabs. I'm showing this to the, but for the listener at home, it's basically a little paper tab where the top half is got a little hole in it where I can hang it off shit. And the bottom half is like basically glued on. It looks kind of like gravel or sandpaper, I would say.
Yeah, I was going to say sandpaper.
And what it is actually is a ton of wasp eggs. These are all wasp eggs and wasp egg and wasp food. So they hatch
This is a terrible reveal.
This is the worst idea I've ever heard.
So, hey, Kato. Hey, Kato.
Yeah.
Kato.
Yeah.
Lick it.
No. Absolutely not. This is important.
Oh, Patrick, you can go in front of the camera and basically swallow a Switch cartridge that you don't know where it's been. But Kato won't lick
the wasp eggs
for content.
So
nobody's watching right now.
Nobody's wasping right now.
Yeah.
is what I feel.
What level of certainty do you have that none of these fuckers are gonna hatch?
What do you mean?
They're wasp eggs.
Yeah, they're gonna hatch. I've watched them hatch. Actually, if you
on your wall where you nail them up.
Yeah. You can see them. They're here's the thing.
Kato,
so people
are you
thinking
releasing wasps into your home. What are you?
Yeah, what the fuck is going on?
This is a very specific species of parasitic wasp that is microscopic. They're smaller than noceums. They're like tiny, but they're still technically a type of wasp. So not wasp. Yeah, not the
so
wasp.
So like a gnat? Is that what is a noceum? A gnat? Is that what
essentially?
You're...
Yeah, like you know the tiny ass bugs that you know technically exist. Fruit flies tend to be a little bigger, I think. But, like, the kind that, like, you know technically exists, and sometimes you can feel them, but they're, like, so small that you're going to miss them just flying through the air. So that's what these are.
Bro, you are releasing invisible wasps into your home. Yes. What are you doing?
What they do is they specifically look for moth eggs. Yeah. They go to the moth eggs and they lay their own eggs inside of them. And then when
eggs
there are
on top
no
of eggs on top of eggs on top of eggs.
Yeah. They take over the moth eggs. So the moths never hatch. Their eggs hatch. But this is the only way they can survive, which means after a generation has gone through doing this and there are no moth eggs left, they just die out.
How long does a generation last?
It's like
18 months?
No, it's not that long. It's like a few weeks. I believe it's 3 to 4 weeks.
It's still a long time to have a part of your house that you can't enter because of
the wasp zone.
It's fine.
You're going back in there?
Yes, 100%. To be clear, this is the second time I've done this. The first time it worked.
I'm never going to your.
When did you do the first time?
You cannot see them. They are in me. They are completely.
But you told me they exist. That's like
when
someone came up to me and said, hey, I've got these. If you hang this up on your wall, it'll tell you if God exists. And then turns out it does.
Yeah.
So, well, you can't see him. Like, yeah, but I know he's there. It kind of fucks up my whole thing now that I know God exists.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kato, when did you first do this?
Back when we originally, so it was like late June, early, like mid June.
Have you been to his?
That's what I'm trying to collaborate.
Have you been to their place?
That's what I'm trying to collaborate. That's what I'm trying to calibrate is if I have been in Kato's home during the wasp hour.
Did Kato's camera just go bad for you?
Yeah, it did.
Is Kato's camera working for you?
Kato's camera is. We're now actually looking at Wasp Kato. they're back.
Yeah,
hey, look, real Kato.
Yeah, all of a sudden, all of a sudden, Kato started shit talking.
Oh, so I was there when the wasps were present. Is that what you're saying?
Probably.
When was it?
You don't think this is something you should warn people about?
When was it?
It's nothing. They don't attack. They don't eat human. They don't do the sting.
If I'm breathing in 1,000 wasps a second,
you are
already.
There are bugs and organisms in
your
body.
Don't tell me that.
That is not a good excuse for not telling people.
Do you know how many tardigrades just exist in the fucking air?
Yeah, but you're breeding them explicitly. Look, lots of things happen in life that you can't account for.
Yeah.
That's life. But then if there's a door that says... Yo, inside there's a science experiment occurring. They are.
I'm double masking in Kato's house from here on out. I'm double masking that. Like, nah, I'm not breathing in your wasps. Can't get me.
Here's the other
I know what
thing
you're trying
about
to do.
This specifically is that this isn't some like thing that I'm doing. Like, I didn't buy these wasps to use for this reason outside of like this is the purpose. This is the explicit purpose that these wasps exist. Like, they are sold for this specific thing and to be as unintrusive as possible. And usually they're sold to, like, farmers who have, like, really bad stuff with moths, like, eating their crops and shit. But it's like a totally okay thing. I'm just, like, one with nature. The wasps are part of my ecosystem, and I'm okay with that because they're helping me out.
The way you are talking about this now
is insane.
It makes it so much worse. I'm done. Okay, wasp talk.
No, wait. Can I ask one more question?
Yeah. One last one from the audience?
Sure.
Kato, has there ever been a time while doing this process when the density of wasps was such that you're like, oh, hey, look, a wasp cloud?
No. No, you can't.
You've
see
never
them.
Had a wasp
no.
cloud.
No, 100% not.
You can't see them because they're not dense enough.
They're not dense enough. They don't tend to swarm that way. And like they're so small. They're so small. I had to take out a loop to look at them to see if it was real because I wanted to know. I was like, is this just bullshit? Like, I don't see anything. And it was like, I took out my little. So a loop is like that little eye thing that you could put over photography usually, or sometimes when people are looking at like.
Jewelry.
Yeah, that's the one I was thinking.
Yeah, I think the jeweler's loop is the signature loop.
I have a bunch of photography loops, so I took out my little photography loop and put it on the thing, and I was like, oh yeah, there they are. They're walking around hatching. So they're just tiny, invisible moths.
No, I'm done.
They look like wasps?
No, they look like kind of weird small bugs. Like it was hard to tell details even then. Even with the loop, they're very, very small.
So they look like a little guy and not like a just like a tiny wasp.
No, yeah. There's like no that stinger. There was no like there's no like visible stinger. They look like a little guy.
They're not giving wasp.
No, they're not giving wasp. They're giving egg bug, honestly. They're little round guys.
They're giving egg bug?
Yeah. Shout outs to cohost.org.
I can go to Kato's help meet egg bug.
You can meet tiny invisible egg bug.
I can meet egg bug at Kato's house.
Okay, we're done. Egg bug. But you know what? Frankly, it doesn't get any better for any of us because we're just transitioning to talk about something. Get the fuck, Kato, take that away from your mouth.
The other side is just paper. I did look.
Let's talk about something that is also, when described, when looked at, looks uncomfortable and nauseating.
Yeah.
Which is Hyper Demon. So actually, Kato, he provided us with an excellent transition.
There are Hyper bugs Demon. In Hyper Demon. Let me tell you about Scuttle Bugs.
The new game from the developers of Devil Daggers?
Yes. Sorath is the name of the dev.
Yeah. Do you want to set up Hyper Demon?
Yes, I do. So Devil Daggers was released in, I believe, 2016 as like a surprise hit indie FPS as like a score, not score, it's like a time, how long can you survive FPS set in the sickest metal hellscape you've ever seen. That is all about managing swarms of flying skulls and demons kind of assaulting your vision at every moment as you fire daggers out of your fingers. Devil Daggers. It was extremely popular, or surprisingly popular for like a $5 indie game. And then the developer went quiet for many, many years before showing up randomly without warning. I believe 4 days ago and dropping Hyper Demon, the sequel to Devil Daggers, the only way I can describe Hyper Demon to pull on a head I wrote earlier is Hyper Demon makes every other version of hell you've seen look like a bad first draft, because Hyper Demon, every single thing you see is bathed in like gold and chrome. Covered in blood, the game uses a fisheye lens.
Yeah, well, this is new, right? So, Devil Daggers is a game that was extremely frenetic and fast and like a sensory overload on purpose, combined with the speed of a quake, right?
Yes, I would say that Devil Daggers is not sensory overload on purpose as
no. But I guess what I mean, like, if you. Absent the existence of Hyper Demon, you could look at Devil Daggers and be like, wow, this is meant to overwhelm me. And then all of a sudden you look at Hyper Demon and go, no, that was nothing. And specifically, like when they first announced this, it wasn't on Steam, when they were describing, I know a fisheye is a good analogy for it, but like practically speaking, what does that mean in the game as the player?
So basically, To put it into clear context, what is the highest FOV you've ever used in a first person shooter?
I don't mess with the FOV, so
you don't mess with FOV, so probably like 65, 80, 85.
Yeah, whatever the standard sort of stuff is. I know that for some people they either have a preference or there's a motion sickness associated with FOV, but I've never had to really touch it.
So standard FOV is between, I believe, like 45-ish, which is really small, and like probably 110, 120. That's where they top out. Hyper Demon starts at 90. it tops out at 180, which is what I play with. My character can see a full 180 degrees of vision.
Wait, so you're taking a game that already has...
Yes.
A really wide FOV, and then choosing.
I was pushing it to the absolute max because this happened because I started playing on 90 and I was like, okay, cool, I kind of get it. And then my brain was like, we need more information. We need to be processing more things right now. Let's knock that up to 120. And I did. And my brain was like, hell yeah. And then after like 40 runs, my brain was like, you know, there's extra information that we could be using here. We could know where everything is all the time. We could know where literally everything is all the time. And I went, what? And my brain went, we can turn it up to 180, baby. And I said, you know what? Let's get a gamer. And then I did. And It's astounding.
Is it useful or just aesthetically pleasing?
Both.
Okay.
It is both useful and aesthetically pleasing, because the other thing I should note is that you don't just see in front of you. You can see behind yourself too. So in in Hyperdemon, you are in this almost black void with this like opalescent glowing floor that you are walking across that is reflecting the world in front of you. Great, cool, 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 cool. The whole thing is that you're trying to kill as many demons as you can as fast as possible. The scoring starts at 10 seconds, so like 10, and starts counting down from 10 seconds. Every time you kill an enemy, you get an additional 3 seconds. And so your goal is to kill enemies faster than the score is counting down. So basically, if you kill one enemy in a second, your net score gain is 2. If that makes sense.
Okay, so the scoring is not like you're getting 100 points. It was actually like, it's how much time you can add.
Yes.
Total.
Yes.
Oh, I will say, as an aside, I played this game for about 30 seconds just to confirm that I admired Devil Daggers, but didn't want to play it. And I was like, I'm pretty sure if I didn't like that, I don't think this one's going to be much different. And I confirmed in 30 seconds, it's not for me, but the... Just look it up if you also believe that this game is not for you. The scroll that it does to rank you on the scoreboard is one of the coolest like mechanisms for displaying like where you rank. It feels so satisfying to realize you are at the bottom of the leaderboard and aren't any good at this game. And that was the satisfaction I got out of my 2 minutes in Hyperdemon.
I was playing on day one, and so I was in the top, 100 for a while. I was in the top 50 for a while, and then I was in the top 100, and then I was in the top 1,000, and now I'm back in the top 500. My highest score is 93. And so you go in, there are 4 types of enemies. One of them are colloquially called scuttlebugs. Scuttlebugs, you shoot them with your cool daggers, they get stunned, and then you can either finish them off by shooting them more, or you can jump on or dash into them, at which point you boost forward like you do in with the balloons in Neon White. There are these like weird snake skulls who like to attach themselves to power-ups, and you have to destroy 3 of the skulls and the snakes all go away. They're motherfuckers. There's an enemy spawner that just makes little skulls and then a big skull, whatever. And then finally, there is a enemy that sucks in all of the gems that you use to charge up your weapon, which is either a stream of daggers or a cool laser. And so they suck up all the gems that makes your laser cool. And so these are the 4 enemies the game has. The spawning order of these enemies is always the same. And so, the thing I actually think that makes Hyperdemon really sick, in addition
to... kind of a puzzle.
It's a puzzle. It's not just a puzzle. It's a skating game. You're trying to make a line. Like, you are trying to make a combo line between all of these very specific mechanics and very specific enemy placements of being like, okay, cool. I know that at this point in the run, I am going to have these elements at play. How do I make the perfect line between all of these things? So, for example, every time I start a run, the first 10 seconds for me, I destroy a spawner, I destroy its crystal, I pick up the little gems, I jump into the air, I ground pound on one of the serpent guys I was mentioning earlier, I take its crystals, I shoot them out at the scuttlebugs, I dash into the scuttlebugs, and then I go from there. And so, like, that is a line that I have set up. That is a line that I understand. And so every time I'm running through and, like, coming into these same enemy patterns, I'm going to be like, okay, cool. How do I set up this situation such that these people will be in this position at this particular point in time while also improvising in order to keep your score up? It is an incredible feeling. Once you've like hit that level of like understanding how to build score, it is unlike anything else I've ever played. Where it is this mix of clear strategy and trying to do like fighting games with the best analogy I can think of for it, where it's like you are doing set play in a fighting game where you are setting up very specific things that you can put your opponent, in this case the game, into situations that you can manipulate and benefit from, right? And it combines that with this extremely initially overwhelming visual aesthetic that eventually becomes like second nature. I didn't turn it up to 180 FOV because I wanted the game to be harder. I turned it up to 180 FOV because my brain was like, no, 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 we need all of this information to be able to do this properly, and you can handle it.
The idea of seeing behind, kind of when we played that one, remember when we were doing the demo streams? I think it was one on Xbox. There was this.
What is that called?
Or maybe it was the Steam one, but there was a shooter in which like the basic like premise was, when you shoot, you're shooting in front of yourself and in back of yourself, and that you, I don't know if the screen was split or you had like the equivalent of like a rear view mirror in a car.
Something like that.
And Kato and I looked at this game for about a minute and a half and went, I'm not motion sick, but I don't want to look at this anymore.
Yeah.
And that's really the reaction I had. So Devil Daggers, I dropped off not because of the mechanics, but because it's a high score game. And like, I find them, do not find them personally motivating. This one, I'm sure if I spent like real time, I could grok more of it, but it is so aesthetically overwhelmed, like purposely overwhelming. It's a sensory overload on purpose that is almost as much of a block to getting into what the game is than, for example, it doesn't explain any of its mechanics unless
yes,
you specifically go into a tutorial and look them up. But it doesn't like, hey, let's like walk you through them. And it has a good, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, there's a lot going on. It's not just shoot and like a dodge. Like, there's a million different mechanics. It's a game I have a deep respect for and want nothing to do with. Like, just absolutely none. It's a game I want to put out in attract mode. Like, when I've talked about games with attract modes and how cool they would be, this is a prime, like, cool to look at. In no world do I want to play it.
It is another good comparison. Actually, I'll use Neon White as a comparison. Hyper Demon wants you to learn how to play the hardest levels of Neon White from minute one. And is like, here is the hardest level of Neon White you can possibly imagine. This is point A.
Yeah, and I go, I'm too old for this.
Right, and it goes, we want you to see how far you can push this. And some people have hit 360, which is the game's max score, at which point I believe you fight some kind of divine being.
I will say one of the points they were making about this one was like, hey, there's an end. Like, there is sort of an arc, as opposed to just go until your fingers bleed. Sort of thing. Although I presume maybe if you defeat whatever the being is, that
it loops.
Does the game end or keep going?
So from what I can gather, it seems like you can loop it again and keep the same level of power you ended the last
then
run with.
I was wondering if the game ends, then in some ways the game becomes a solvable problem, right? In which there is, in theory, like a ceiling on how fast, like what your score could be if you were to play the game well enough, if it caps at whatever the ending is, you know what I mean? Whereas if it loops, then there is no like hard cap on the score.
Well, also I think that there may be a hard cap on the score because the new run is a new run. The game treats it as a new run. The
you
highest
can just keep playing.
Right. So you can, but here's the thing, you can shave milliseconds off. Like, that's like, there is a, I'm sure, a theoretical maximum time. But I think the human limit is going to be significantly under that, because the maximum score is going to require such a perfect confluence of factors that you have no control over. And that's, you know, again, you know what enemies are going to come in what order. You don't know where they are, and you can manipulate that order, but you have to be really careful about manipulating that order. There's this one combo that I really try. I've been trying to get down effectively, and it requires me to spawn certain enemies in a certain order, and I've been fucking it up by like less than a second. And I'm like, if I get this, I will be able to take out half the screen in one shot. And I can't, because I've been just slightly getting the timing off on trying to figure out how to spawn the right enemy at the right time. So I get a power up and a crystal I can shoot the power up into at the same time as this enemy. It's extremely mechanically dense in a way that, like, my brain lashes onto almost unlike anything else I've ever played. There is no score attack game that does what Hyper Demon does to my brain. I can't stop thinking about it.
Yeah, it sounds like what happened to you is like my reaction to Boomerang X from a little while back, a game that 30 seconds in, like, oh, this is different, in that my reaction to it is different and feels primal in a way that I don't feel with a lot of games. Like, you just, your brain latches to it in a way that even the designers can't intend.
I mean, the only comparison I can think of for what Hyper Demon is there is this, there's this French playwright, kind of, called Antonin Artaud, who in the early 20th century comes up with this idea called the Theater of Cruelty. And the idea of the Theater of Cruelty is a bunch of plays that are functionally impossible to put on. It is shit like a star breaks open on the stage and rains blood and viscera down onto the audience, and then a scorpion walks on from stage right, like a live scorpion, to the left. And Artaud's theory was that if you hit people with maximum visual stimuli, maximum overwhelming information, right, it can shock them out of their accustomment to the baseness of reality, which for Artaud, because he was, I believe, a radical leftist, he was trying to get people to develop class consciousness by shocking them out of accepting the world as it is, by hitting them with the maximum amount of visual stimuli possible. That is the only comparison I can think of for Hyper Demon. It is the video game version of the Theater of Cruelty. It is so deep in my brain now.
Well, that sounds very cool, and I look forward to watching you and other people play it. that is out now on PC, on Steam. And if for some reason you find that game too much, it is worth saying, if you think the mechanics are interesting, like, and somehow you miss Devil Daggers, go back and check that out, because that gives you a little taste without a fisheye lens attached to it. We're going to take a little break, come back, and talk some more games.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 6 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $2.99 each. Then get flavorful large avocados for 99 cents each, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And we're back. Kato, you have been playing... I don't know much about this game. I just know that when I pasted a code, you went, ah! The new game from X.
Cosmo D.
Betrayal at Club Low. Set this one up for me.
Yeah, so Betrayal at Club Low is the new game from Cosmo D, who I famously misinterpreted one of his games as a... A photography game once, because there's a very good photography mechanic that you get introduced to early on, so early that I hadn't hit the I talked about this on Waypoint Radio. I was like, this
pitched it as a photography game, and then we're contacted by the developer, and it's
100%. Wow. I was like, no, you just didn't get to the actual thing, because I got so engrossed in like spending a solid two hours wandering that space and like photographing things.
This is like the equivalent of don't put a solitaire game in your game, because someone like Kato or Rob will just spend hours playing the solitaire game instead.
Yeah. And like the kind of kind of through line for a lot of Cosmo D's like work is a sort of surrealist, like landscape that is always, it's always in some city, but like there's like buildings that have like that are made out of heads. And the one that I was talking about before that is not a photography game but happens to have good photography in it is called Tales from Off-Peak City. There's always like this kind of disconcerting notion to like all of the people that are in these games. The models are always kind of off. It's got a really fun aesthetic to them. And this game specifically is a sort of kind of like a CRPG riff in the style of, I would say the closest thing to it is probably Disco Elysium, where you have...
You don't make pizzas in Disco Elysium,
no,
Kato, I'm looking up screenshots in this game, and it says, the time has come to make some serious pies.
Yeah.
And those pizzas look delicious.
And that your conditions are wet and injured.
Yeah, you're wet, and this is, yeah, okay. So basically, think, like, CRPG situation, except, like, you know, you have your regular, you have, like, wisdom, observation, music, you know, regular skill to have, cooking, regular skills that you all have in these kinds of games. And essentially, each of those skills is associated with a dice. And when you come upon something that, like, in the world you want to interact with, you roll these dice against... something opposing it. Like, so if you're trying to convince someone, you're basically, your opponent is that person's like obstinance or so, for example.
Yeah, no, here's a good example of this. I posted a couple of screenshots in our chat where you have it's like guard's gullibility versus your deception.
This is very good because you've got the head-to-head rolling. If you play this game, go into the options before you even start it. There's two rolling options. There's classic and head-to-head. Please, I beg of you, play with the head-to-head version. It's
what is the difference?
Just classic is just like it rolls the dice on the screen and they just like roll, like there's a flat surface there and then like you get your answers. Head-to-head, which is what you've pasted here in our chat, is there's two heads kind of floating in space, and there's like a little spinning platform in the middle where the brain should be that spins, and then your dice drop in from the top and hit the little spinning platform, then drop out the neck onto like a flat plane where that's where they settle and you get what your role is. So essentially, yeah, it's great. It's so silly. Like this is kind of the vibes of this game kind of wrapped up in this kind of very weird, like it's all this kind of weird, slightly off kilter sort of feeling, aesthetic, and vibes. You roll against whatever you're like, yeah, the guard's gullibility versus how deceptive you are. And essentially, you can re-roll a couple times, but what's important is how these dice come to be. So there's like your base statistic of like, here's how good you are at deception. You can upgrade the whole dice and make every face on it go up by one by paying a certain amount of money, like a big amount of money. Or if you want to make one face go up by one, say like you want to upgrade from a 4 to a 5, you like pay a certain amount and like one side of that die is now a 5 instead. So yeah, there's like this kind of variability. And the way that you get the thing that you're putting into there is not like skill points, it's money. So you see at the top of these things, there's like just a wad of cash with how much money you have on the side. And you get money both by just winning rolls and also through your pizza dice. So you find various pizza ingredients in the world. And every once in a while,
this isn't a mini game. You should. I kind of.
This is not a mini game.
This game, you should have forwarded from the top. Oh, there's dice. Oh, like a compelling setting. Pizza, pizza,
pizza, pizza,
pizza, pizza,
pizza.
Oh, but like, fuck! I want a pizza.
Yeah, now I want pizza for Linner.
I'm ordering Linner right now. I'm in pizza.
The overarching like plot is that you're a secret agent going into a club low to save a separate secret agent that has gone missing, and you are disguised as a pizza delivery guy who also happens to be able to make pizza because you got to be really convincing about your disguise.
I mean, yeah, I mean, again, like, look up these screenshots on Steam. There was one with a, I mean, this game has mostly just in the, I mean, obviously the aesthetic is, as you said, really interesting, and I don't even know how to describe it really, yeah. But it, but like, frequently in games that have like high resolution images, they tend to be everywhere. And this game doesn't really have that. I mean, it has it in some places, but in specifically, the pizzas have the highest of high resolutions, 4K yeah. HDR scanned
look
in
at that pizza
pizzas.
Cheese. Scanned in photos of pizza cheese.
I want to know.
It's so good.
Know,
that margarita
developer,
looks so good. I want to
right
eat
in.
So bad.
Did you take that photo? Where'd you get that? Is that like Getty Images?
Getty Images pizza?
Where is that? Where is that coming from?
I'm gonna order margarita pizza right now.
So as essentially you find different pizza pizza dice that you're putting your own toppings on. And so these toppings are mostly, this is kind of how you start to generate more money after you do like a kind of a small intro without the pizza. One of my pizza die is just every side has like $2 except for one side that has $4. And that's like different cheeses. The mozzarella cheese is $4, and then the fancy the boule, that's the $4. And then you've got the shitty mozzarella for the $2. And there's like one of them is an eggplant, which is really good. The eggplant is if you land on that side, you can reroll your opposition's dice. And another way that you get more in different dice is through conditions. So in a bunch of these, you see your conditions, like, for example, the first one, you're wet and injured. And those mm-hmm. will be dice that have different effects. Usually the negative ones will have negatives to your rolls. Some of them have positives and negatives because it's kind of funny to consider, what if you like being wet? And then that'll make you better at things.
Why am I wet and injured? Do you know?
Yeah, I know why you're wet probably at this point. Looking at where that is, it's because you either drank and or pulled something mysterious out of a puddle in the middle of the street in New York. Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Or not New York. I don't know if it's actually New York, but it's just like it between the pizza and other things, yeah. it definitely feels like a New York analog at least. And yeah, like part of the kind of like the rhythm of the game is doing a bunch of silly side things like drinking from the puddle in order to get conditions that may or may not help you do other things by giving you these condition dice, which only last for the very next roll and then they go away. So you're like, you're kind of, there's a sense of like exploration where you kind of want to do a bunch of stuff to see what other conditions you get,
right?
Or to waste a negative condition on something you don't care about. Like I had like a really bad one where it was like negative. There were like two faces on it that were like -5s, and I was like, I don't want to roll.
Smelling like the city is one of the conditions.
Yeah,
in this
yeah, that's one of the earliest things you can get, and it's Jesus. Like you walk over a like open sewer, and then you have to. You either use your constitution basically to breathe it in and not puke, or you can use your like other physical one to like hold your breath, or like you can use your cooking skill in order to pick out what the different smells are, because you're so good at cooking and smelling aromas that you can be like, I can just intellectualize this problem and walk past it.
Yes. Yeah, yes.
The amount of
strat.
Yeah. The amount of different, like the there's never a, there's always like one that is going to be like the obvious, like this is just a normal response to this thing happening. And the rest of them are going to be ridiculous in some way or another. Like they're like the, what if I just really focused on trying to pick out what the bad smells are so that I can think about how those bad smells came to be and therefore distract myself from how bad it is making me feel, right?
Incredible.
And so, yeah, it's a really fun game that kind of pushes exploration by having these condition dice that only last for your next roll. And then you like end up picking up other condition dice by failing with your next roll. And they kind of stack in funny ways. the story is very kind of silly and nonsensical. You're trying to like get into this club and there's like multiple different ways. And I ended up opening up like every way just to kind of mess around with what all the like, it's one of those, like, I want to see what all the interactions are going to be, even if like,
yeah.
I already found the back way into this club, but I noticed that ladder over there. I'm like, I'm wondering what I can do with that fucking ladder. Like, what kind of hijinks is this game going to throw at me? And it's never let me down when I've gone to go like do that, even though it's not quote unquote necessary to do the next thing in the game, you know?
This game is strong. I need to play it before I put my game of the year list together, right? Vibes. And yeah, then all of a sudden I'm like trying to find a way to sneak this on to right, number
like,
seven.
It's like number, it's going to get in there somehow.
It's like, oh shit, this is really good. I'm going to play it on December 7th on an afternoon that I take off from writing. Yeah, this sounds really cool. I literally just added it to my Steam library so I can check this out. It also seems like it's a pretty short, like a one sitting game. If you
like really want to, how much did I play? Like I played like 2 hours, but I'm like doing everything possible. I'm thinking you could probably get through it in like three total. But
Kato,
yes.
Is it just goofy, or do you feel like there's something there?
Is there
a thing here? Does this game have a thing it believes?
I think it might. It's hard to tell because I feel like I've been doing all of the things enough that it hasn't hit yet. But there's definitely something about how everyone always responds to you is like they're as a pizza delivery person, and often that comes with not disdain exactly, but a sort of sense of like, we're not gonna acknowledge you because you are kind of an important person in like the periphery. Like, sure, go ahead, pizza delivery guy. So I think there might be something there, but like I haven't yet seen if like that bears out into something overarching that it's gonna be saying, or if it's more like that is just like the way that they want to talk about you know, being in this sort of work. Oh, you got a margarita pizza. Oh shit.
Yeah.
Kato sent this picture, and I got so hungry that I decided to order a margarita pizza mid-conversation.
You gotta do what your body amazing tells you. You amazing gotta do. So I'm happy for future Ren. I'm also happy for current Patrick for two reasons. One, I'll get into this more on Monday once I've had a chance to play a little further, but immediate two thumbs up to Return to Monkey Island, the new Monkey Island adventure game.
Nice.
It's a brand new adventure from Ron Gilbert and Dave. I know it's not Wasserman. That's the pollster person. Dave Grossman, I believe, is the co-writer on that. There's some specific things I want to call out on that, but just like as a heads up, it's awesome. Love the first 90 minutes that I've played. Cannot wait to play more of it. And I actually think it's a really terrific entry if you have not played an adventure game before, aren't used to the stylings of them. I'll get into the specifics of how it kind of like grants passage to folks who don't just have the ingrained nostalgia on next week's podcast. But early signs are extremely, extremely good. Nice. The game that sort of took me by surprise that I didn't intend to spend a bunch of time with and then did was Shovel Knight Dig, which is a new spinoff from Shovel Knight. Shovel Knight is geez, that came out in like 2014, a long, long time ago, originally for the Wii U, and then it's since come to everything, is an exceptional, exceptional action platformer. Just really well made, both a terrific homage to the genre while also doing its own creative spins on some really well-worn mechanics and conventions, specifically the dig mechanic and using that as sort of a jump and platforming thing. Their Kickstarter was so successful. They did all these expansions for years. That game was supposed to be done. And then their entire team spent like another 4 years building really, really exciting expansions to it. Most of which I played it like 2 months before COVID, in which I was the sickest I've ever been and had like 103.5 fever for 4 days. And I don't remember those expansions very well. I know I enjoyed them in the brief bits that I had. Bouts of consciousness as I waited for the virus to leave me. They put out a spinoff, Shovel Knight Pocket Dungeon, which is like a more puzzle centric one. I forget exactly what the puzzle like if it's a match 3 or I don't know. All I know is I played like 20 minutes of it, immediately disliked it and bounced off it. And so as a result, it was not made by Yacht Club Games who made Shovel Knight. And so my expectations were actually pretty low for Shovel Knight Dig, although it's a different developer. My thought was, well, it's nice that they're trying to make other Shovel Knight games while they work on, they have a game called Mina the Explorer. Mina the Explorer that's coming out where you, it's an overhead 2D kind of Zelda-ish game.
Mm. And they're also working on it.
Hmm?
Will you play as Rob Zachney's dog?
God, I wish. and then they're also working on a big 3D game that's like the big follow-up to Shovel Knight. But maybe I just don't like...
Mina the Hollower.
So I was right about the Mina part. Yeah.
It's an animal, though. It's so cute.
It is an animal. You're right. Yeah. You're right. It's, you know, maybe that is Mina, Rob's dog's spirit animal is Mina the Hollower, for all we know. And so I had pretty low expectations for Shovel Knight Dig. And so I, you know, got early access to it earlier this week, booted it up, and am immediately greeted by a game that has, like, Shovel Knight is, like, NES era 8-bit sort of approach. Not, like, completely got to be exactly what the hardware was capable of, but evoking that style. Mm-hmm. This is Shovel Knight with, like, 16-bit SNES era graphics. It's beautiful. It's transformed Shovel Knight into a roguelite more than a roguelike. I mean, obviously it shares the same structure of going on runs and then coming back and starting all over again, losing your progress. But in the roguelite model, where there is some sense of progress that is happening between runs, or you're unlocking new abilities or new armor sets, that is here. But it is sort of a modern take on Mr. Driller or Dig Dug, in which you have the action elements of sort of attacking enemies that are in your way while constantly burrowing down. And the burrowing that you're doing with Shovel Knight's shovel, in addition to obviously attacking enemies, you can swing it forward and you can kind of pogo bounce between enemies to do damage. You know, there's money littered everywhere, or power-ups or objects that unlock secret things throughout the world that are constantly baiting you into doing more dangerous things than just like getting to a little bit deeper, getting to the next area. It does a really wonderful job of translating basically everything that was good about Shovel Knight to a genre that, as the way I put it in my kind of pseudo review, because I didn't really play enough of it to call it like a formal review, but was sort of just a deep impression so far, is that like Hades, Spelunky, Dead Cells are some of my favorite games of all time. Like all three would rank somewhere in my top 20. And yet, it's not a genre that I like. When I played Souls and Souls Clicked, I was like, I'll play your ugly ass shitty Souls spinoff from a developer I've never heard of, because I just need more of that while I wait for the next hit. Like, roguelikes aren't the same way. I don't think about them. I'm not seeking out them. In fact, usually I see games in which I really like the premise and go, oh no, it's in a roguelike. Curse to Golf. Kato, I ended up not liking the final version of Curse to Golf very much, because it's really well designed, plays great, and I just don't want to play it in the structure that it's in. And that's not even necessarily the game's fault. It's hard for me to even necessarily, because of my feelings on the structure, is Curse to Golf doing anything wrong, or is that just the baggage I'm taking with how I would rather play this game to it? I don't know. But what I can say is, not only does Shovel Knight Dig get over that hump to justify, hey, spending time in an action game that I might want in a more traditional single player sort of setting, but I actually think the roguelike stuff is like really well done, satisfying, not just justified, but elevates the game they were setting out to make. And it's just really, really well done from top to bottom. I'm having an exceptionally good time with Shovel Knight Dig.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm looking, it might be the game I've been struggling between. Should I keep playing it, or should I save it for a stream? Mm-hmm. Because there is nothing more satisfying than playing a roguelike on stream. And so I might pause where I'm at with Shovel Knight Dig and then do a couple of streams with it, just so I can.
Oh, hell yeah.
Sharing the discovery of like playing Spelunky with Scoops at Giant Bomb is like one of my all time favorite things that I've ever done on the internet, because it was like the joy of learning a game alongside an audience is delightful. I don't think Shovel Knight Dig has quite that depth to it, but it also doesn't seem nearly as difficult as a Spelunky. There's not a lot of one-hit deaths. I've It seemed to have gotten to the third area, and I think there were only four. So I don't think it's a game that meant to take dozens of hours to finish, but it's really good. It's on everything, including Apple Arcade. I don't think this would work very well with touch controls, but you can connect any number of controllers to every Apple device these days. And there's those really good, backbone controller things that they would make this work really well on a phone. So that is Shovel Knight Dig. Let's take a quick dip into the question bucket. Eddie, hi Waypoint Crew. With spooky season just around the corner, or as Patrick would argue, already here, I agree. Once the 12-foot skeleton goes up, spooky season has arrived.
Yeah.
And also seems to have unlocked spooky season for the other neighbors. Like, oh, they put up the skeleton. Oh, thank God, I can start putting out my stuff and not be judged for it.
What if you make a spooky neighborhood? Wait, Patrick, what if this is the beginning of the little ghouls neighborhood?
Well, this was not the sole responsibility of the 12-foot skeleton, but some neighbors that we became good friends with over the course of the pandemic, and then they realized that Katie and I were as into spooky season as one can be, maybe we should bring back our adult Halloween party. I was like, I'd go to that. And so I got a Facebook invite.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, this, you know, the adult Halloween is back on. So yes, I think you're right. I think we are manifesting a ghoul town in our neighborhood slowly but surely.
Amazing. You're causing a change in your community.
That is, I'm advocating for
skeletons.
A spooky neighborhood. We advocate for different things.
I want to go to Patrick's neighborhood. I want someone to drive through Patrick's neighborhood and just have it be every house a 12-foot skeleton all year round. That,
much like welcome to the court, motherfucker. As much as I'd like to radicalize the neighborhood overnight, it's sort of a long-term investment that I'm just going to have to see the fruits of in the years to come. Anyway, from Eddie, hi, Wimper, with spooky season just around the corner, what weird or supernatural thing do you actually believe in? Aliens, ghosts, chupacabra. Extra points if you have a story about an encounter with said weird thing to share on the pod. Love the show. Eddie. Can I say that I wish I believed in ghosts? Would love to believe in ghosts.
Can you tell me?
Can
a
I
fun
say
story?
The things that I wish I believed in? Because I can't say that I subscribe to.
Can you accompany it with a fun story? I think that's the deciding line. Because if you're like, I wish werewolves were real, and here's the time that I learned they weren't. Like that's something.
Well, the opposite of that is there's a famous story that someone that was close enough to my family that we would call them an aunt, but they, weren't technically related. She always tells a story, the Briar Wolf, I forget the exact. It's a story she's told as long as I have known her that she's been in our lives about she for a long time lived in a house in Wisconsin. Way out in the sticks. I mean, there are no street lights. You are a mile between houses. You are cut off. I mean, you're only 10 minutes from like a proper city, but it's a long 10 minutes. And there was a night where, what she describes as howling coming while she was in bed that she could only describe as half human, half wolf. Like she would tell us and like no bullshit when I as an adult, like she's like, that wasn't a bit. Like I don't know what to tell you. Like I heard something that sounded like coughed like a person, and then I would hear howling. She's like, there are you do hear stuff out there in the middle of the like these farming areas, but you don't usually hear them together, and you don't usually hear them outside of your bedroom window. She sticks by that story decades later with a straight face. And even when she's super drunk and you're just like, just tell me it's fake. Like, it's okay. You can drop the bit. Never dropped it.
Hell yeah. That rules. Mm-hmm. I might be a bit of a ghost person. Like, I have specific feelings about ghosts.
What's the specific feeling about a ghost?
I don't think that ghosts are, I don't think that like ghosts in the traditional sense, like I don't think a specific specter is going to get your ass. However, I do think that vibes do seep into places to enough of a degree that it becomes functionally inseparable from being a ghost. Like, like I think that if you,
places are haunted. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Places can
be haunted.
Is
this like, you know, when Alex Navarro of Nextlander, I know that like him and his partner will go, they like on, when they go on vacation, they will, like some people like specifically seek out like murder houses or, you know, like, and stay in a hotel where awful things occurred because it seems spooky and cool. Or is this different?
I think that is a version of it. The example that I always have is that I grew up in a small town in rural Ohio. Not totally small, but it's like 20,000 people, right? Used to be a manufacturing town. Eventually all the factories shut. It was a farming town and then a manufacturing town. Eventually all that shit shuts down. But behind the middle school I went to, there's this old unused trail, like unused trail, that goes back a ways, right? And if you could follow it like 50, 100 feet back, not that far, but far enough back in the woods where you can't get construction equipment. And I've checked with people who've lived in the area their entire lives. There has never been a building in that area, in that specific area of the woods. There is just like mounds of concrete and rebar feet deep in the ground, like buried feet deep in the ground, mounds of concrete and rebar. And I used to go there a lot when I was in my teens, just by myself to like think. I took a picture of it once and showed it to a friend of mine, and they immediately went, "This picture makes me feel worse than anything I've ever seen, and I cannot tell you why." And I was like, "Interesting." And they were like, "Yeah, I've been to like the sites of great tragedies, and this makes me feel way, way worse." And so, over the course of many years, after my grandfather passed away, because my grandma and grandpa lived on that same road, I started going there as opposed to their graves, because I was like, "I think this is it. Like, this is the place that actually embodies those people for me, is this inexplicable mass of concrete and rebar in the middle of the woods that like draws attention to the incongruity between this old industrial town and its like farming history and all of the people who wanted to leave but never could." And that is a spot that to me, that's haunted.
That's haunted.
There's spooky shit there.
100%.
If you're not chill, it'll fuck you up. I bet if you show up there and you suck, you're done. You're done, Ski. This is also because my grandmother is the kind of white woman who walks up to her grandchildren and is like, "I think you might have the gift. You're the only one in the family who has the gift."
What? Amazing. Amazing.
The gift. Yeah. My grandmother was like, "Here's the thing. I never tell anyone about the fact that I've talked to my dead brother's ghost." She's like, "I've never told anyone else in the family this, but you, Renata? Mm-hmm. I will tell that I have chatted with my brother's ghost." And I was like, "Yeah, DDs?" And she was like, "Yep."
Yeah.
And I was like, "I'm 17. I'm old enough where I know this isn't a bit for you. This is not this is not a grandmother doing a fun one. Right. This is my grandmother being as serious as she is capable of being."
Damn. I think ghost being real would be cool.
It would be like, so sick.
Be nice to have confirmation there's something after all this. I'll just take that as a baseline. It's like, oh, that's interesting. Well, let's see what's on the other side there. And then also just, you know, maybe you can bump into, who knows? I like it. Kato, any of these ring anything to mind? Any supernatural conspiracy beliefs you want to get off your chest?
I mean, aliens are real. And the government knows about them.
Yes.
Well, that's easy.
We all know that. Yeah.
Wow.
But like, I do believe that, like, they exist.
Is this because of the vastness of space, mathematically,
it's impossible for them.
There has to be intelligent life.
Yeah.
Partially
that. And then, like, I don't know. I, like, really was obsessed as a kid, to the point of giving myself like nightmares for easy like 2 years, that like aliens were real, and I definitely thought they were coming down to like, I don't know what they were gonna do.
Target you. Yeah. You were gonna get the chip.
I was gonna be picked up at some point. Slash.
You ever see Communion? The Christopher Walken movie?
No.
Okay. Don't.
I mean, like, and my dad. Spooky. Oh, sorry, please, Kato.
Oh, just like I have very vivid memories that were obvious that like I have said are dreams of like figures outside of the window that have weird shaped heads. Of like my childhood home that like
let's go.
When I go there I'm like have once in a while like fallen into that dream again or like it's about something about that childhood room that
hell
I lived in.
Yeah.
It's like, oh,
I feel like
why does it happen when I'm here? So, and it's like
somehow you have told a similar story to I think your experience just supports Ren's theory of the vibes.
Yeah, the vibes of that house. I don't know what it is. They're off in a alien specific way though, I feel like.
That house is haunted with aliens.
Kato, if it helps, my not to return to my weird family, but my dad has written multiple articles for relatively well-known UFO Let's enthusiast magazines.
Go.
A few times now as part of his very weird arc, and so I'm right there with you, Kato.
Yeah,
that belief of my father's has rubbed off on me.
Yeah. No, they're real. They're around. I mean, we've all seen the fucking Navy footage at this point, right? The fucking...
And also the fact that they keep being like, we could not show you this.
We don't know what this is.
We fucked up so bad.
Whoops.
Well, yeah. Did you see Nope? The possibilities of it's actually out there.
Oh, God.
I saw Nope. I'd much rather they were... googly-eyed gray aliens than what you find in Nope.
God,
shit. Evangelion is real. really quickly, one other question from Marcel. Hi there, gamersadvice.com. That's good. I recently found myself finishing Steel Rising, even though I disliked many aspects of the game. Same thing happened with Thymesia. Give me a mediocre Souls-like, and I will enjoy the hell out of it, despite all its shortcomings. Except Nioh, because the amount of loot in that game gives me anxiety. Do you have a type of genre or game that makes you forget about all the bad because it speaks to a very potent part of your brain? Also, to answer Rob's question about Steel Rising from a few weeks ago, it does get into political intrigue about halfway through the game. The focus then shifts to you talking to a lot of historical figures and in some cases even choosing sides. It's not exactly subtle, but it's a nice change for the genre, given that Souls-likes tend to be vague for the sake of it. Anyways, love the pod. Even though what about sports, despite not knowing anything about American football, assuming the Bears are engaged in that type of sport. That's wonderful. Greetings, Marcel. Kato, are like roguelike deck builders that for you?
I mean, yeah, this is the thing I was going to say. It's like, mine's easy. There's a fucking bit that we do about it. It's not even roguelike. It's like card-based mechanics, right? Like, I was playing that fucking GBA game. That Dragon Ball GBA game, which is not very good, but it was...
Well, it got cards.
It's got cards, and it was interesting. Like, I like Dragon Ball enough that I, like, you know, put a solid 5 hours into that thing. It's very slow. No one should play that game. It takes forever for anything to happen because, I don't know, probably... I don't know if it was actually, like... hardware limitations or not, but it's just like every transition takes an hour to like go by. But there were card mechanics, and the card mechanics were like interesting enough. So yeah, it's like card-based battle systems, card games themselves generally.
Like for me, it's like platformers. Like I've played countless mediocre platformers that are trying to do something different or interesting because the very basic interaction of jump is like the one that speaks to me the most as a player. And so the quickest way to get me baited into trying something that doesn't look very good, but is trying something interesting is to like make jumping the primary verb for me. Cause I will just, okay, well, I want to see how that feels. I want to see how I rate that against other games that are playing in similar spaces. And so, yeah, It's not a card, but it's like press A to jump. It's like, all right, I will. Done that before. Do that again.
I don't think there's anything that I'll play to the end because I don't finish video games broadly as a person. It's something I do very, very infrequently. However, I think that... I think for me it might be something closer to like a traditional roguelike. Because like the amount of time I put into Caves of Cud, if I see another cool one of those, of like a cool game of that caliber, I will 100% try in a heartbeat. Ooh, I love it so much. The other version of this is sometimes when I get really sad, I have two genres of games I always return to when very depressed. And those genres are totally fine roguelites, like Skull the Hero Slayer was one of them that I put a ton of hours into when I was very, very sad. That's that style of action roguelite. The other is Nintendo 3DS JRPGs, generally from 3 years before whatever the current year is.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a Nintendo 3, and here's the problem with this genre is that it no longer exists as of 2022. I can't find new ones anymore, so I'm gonna have to break the 3 year rule. But there is a very particular Renata tradition of getting extremely depressed in the month of March and then being like, well, let me open up the Nintendo 3DS eShop and see what's on there. Let's really explore the space. Let's find some weird shit. Oh, hell yeah. Oh, this is a Shin Megami Tensei game that's actually a tactics game? Sure. Fuck me up. That game rules. Shout out to the Devil Survivor Overclocked series. And that is probably mine, is weird RPGs in parentheses only when sad.
Gotcha. Very cool. Well, you can send questions into the question bucket at gaming@vice.com with the subject head questions. That's going to do it for the podcast today. Like I said, trying to keep it a little short because you got so much else to listen to. We are in your ears. That is not a problem this week. Don't you worry. If you want more from Waypoint, you can follow us on Twitter at Waypoint, Facebook and YouTube at Waypoint Vice, twitch.tv/Waypoint. This podcast is brought to you ad free if you happen to be a subscriber of Waypoint Plus. .com. That also is getting you lots of podcasts early before anyone else, including the second episode of the sports podcast that I'm doing with Rob Zachney, in which we introduced sad voicemails to the conversation. And I don't just mean because that's all the people put in. I just mean that's going to be the only things that we air. You have to have upsetting stories about sports. That can be your team has been mired in mediocrity, much like our Chicago Bears. It could also be the story that about a person tearing both ACLs tragically while playing soccer, which is one of the stories that we listened to on the podcast.
And it was the person who sent the voicemail?
Yeah. The short version is they tore their ACL, like playing a soccer game in, I think, high school, went through the 6 months of recovery and rehab, and 5 minutes into playing soccer upon the return, immediately tore the other one because they were favoring the leg. It's... brutal. But brutal is what that podcast is about. It is about some people are doing analytics and like how to the wonderful game. Like, no, we're here to feel like shit. And we're here for all the other people that feel like shit. And we're going to commiserate together over beers and a podcast. So give that a listen. We also have by the time you listen to this, the Waypoint Plus subscribers will have access to my turn of Alien as picked by and hosted by Ren. That'll go up the football pod, the sports pod. Well, cause we talk about not just football, the sports pod goes up on Saturday for everyone else, the main feed. And then, Alien will go up next Thursday in the main feed, for everybody else or Wednesday. I don't know. Do we stick to a week or does it just go up on Wednesdays?
We could do, it's usually Wednesday.
No one's quite sure.
We pushed it
a day early. Look at that.
We get it a day early. It's fine.
Yeah, it's fine. It'll go up Wednesday or Thursday. Something like that. Everything's all thrown off because we're doing too many pods now. So if you want that, again, you can listen to those early and without ads by signing up at waypointplus.com. Our theme music is by Bowen. The track is Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. You can learn more at waypoint.zone/Bowen. Also, We write stuff occasionally. Not as much as we used to, but we still do. Ren, you wrote about Hyperdemon. Hyperdemon makes every other vision of hell feel like a bad first draft. Excellent headline. Also did a review of Splatoon 3. Splatoon 3 refines a great idea but fails to innovate. And I wrote a piece about Shovel Knight Dig. Shovel Knight Dig turns an excellent platformer into an awesome roguelike. So check that out and more things occasionally at waypoint.vice.com. But that is going to do it. You can follow me at Patrick Klepek. Kato, where can people follow you?
At @A_Kato_appears.
Ren.
At Ren or Raven.
That's it. Us calling time on this podcast. We will talk to you next week. Until then, fuck capitalism. Go Bears.
Well, that's fun. Hey. Oh, that's cute. You should sit in the sports Bears. Pod with that.
That should be the sign up. That should be the sign up for the sports cap, the sports podcast.
But no.
Came out in real time. I was about to say capitalism. I'm like, C is close to B. Bears. Let's go. Bears.
You should only do it for the sports pod if you say it through tears. at the end of every episode. So you gotta give the fuck capitalism with your whole chest. It's like fuck capitalism. Go Bears. Go Bears. Is the sports podcast just going to be called fuck
sports?
Sports. I don't know. So god damn it.
god damn it. A sports podcast.
Yes.
No, fuck me. A sports podcast.
Basically.